Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 534, titled Peak Oil, Fascism, and Genocide. This is being recorded on November 20th of the year 2005. In a few previous shows, I've talked about not only the peak oil scam, which is exactly what I believe it is, but the fact that peak oil, a doctrine which maintains that we are about to run out of oil and therefore all sorts of things need to be done. The epicenter of that is HIS Energy Consultants, a wholly owned energy consulting subsidiary of Thyssen-Bornemisza Enterprises. Basically, it comes from the epicenter of the Third Reich in both its above-ground and underground phases, and Thyssen-Bornemisza Enterprises and the other elements of the Thyssen Group, very, very close to the Bushes as well. The best treatment, the most complete treatment of that subject is For the Record 506. I've talked about it elsewhere as well. Due to the limitations of time, I'm simply not going to be able to go into all of the fallacies in the peak oil scam. Basically, a monopolistic ploy, at a marketing level, at a commercial level, a monopolistic slash cartel ploy by the petroleum industry to justify permanently high prices. And I think we can also assume the gutting of various environmental regulations and also perhaps a permanently more aggressive policy, foreign policy on the part of the U.S. and others that would justify the forced seizure of fossil fuel reserves. Suffice it to say, not only the development of new technologies, Japan, for example, gets half its electricity now from solar power on a scale from 1 to 10. In terms of sunlight, Japan's about a 5.5. California is a 9.5. We could be doing a lot better than that. Conservation, there are all kinds of things that are possible in terms of conservation, the development of new technologies. China, courtesy, oddly enough, of Thyssen Heavy Industries, is installing a huge magnetic train system that will carry vast numbers of people over great distances at tremendous speeds without using diesel fuel, and a great many other things, including major new petroleum discoveries. The peak oil phenomenon is quite simply a scam. It's a marketing and monopolistic scam. It comes from HIS Energy Consultants, which uses data fed to them by the petroleum industry. So it's kind of like a feedback loop. I would note, by the way, early in January of this year, when everybody was focused on the tsunami in Southwest Asia, China announced the discovery of an enormous oil field, which they forecast, when it was fully developed, would make China largely self-sufficient in terms of fossil fuels and petroleum. That has had almost no publicity and didn't have any real effect on the markets. That's something people might want to take note of. I would note that one of the reasons that gasoline prices are so high and oil prices are so high is that, quite simply, in addition to the fact that a rapidly industrializing and rapidly growing China has increased demand for petroleum, the refining capacity for gasoline has been deliberately reduced, including and especially here in gasaholic United States of America. Instead of increasing manufacturing or refining capacity, it has been deliberately reduced somewhat, despite the fact that greatly increased demand was a matter of record in terms of forecasts. Again, we don't have time to go into that here due to the limitations of time. Suffice it to say that there are holes big enough to drive a highly high-speed magnetic train through in the peak oil hypothesis, all of which comes, again, from Thyssen-Bornemisza Industries using data fed to it by the petroleum industry. In the U.S., probably the best-known advocate of this is Mike Rupert, a former associate, and he, one of his primary sources is Matthew Simmons, the top energy advisor for the Bush administration. The peak oil hypothesis, again, has so many holes that we don't have time to go into it past a point. I've touched on a few. I will deal with some of these at greater length in the future. What we're going to do now is to read a truly horrifying, scary, and for me, infuriating essay by one of the premier advocates of peak oil, a guy named William Stanton. Now, in turn, this straight advocacy for fascism and genocide, a classic eugenic approach to humanity, has received the strong endorsement of Colin Campbell, who is one of the founders of the Association for the Study of Peak Oil. When I use ASPO, that is the Association for the Study of Peak Oil. Like the peak oil hypothesis itself, this essay and its various presumptions are so full of holes that we don't have time to go into it. One of the things that ASPO does is to attribute the growth in world population during the industrial age to fossil fuels. There are all kinds of things that have done that, including the discovery of the germ theory of disease, antibiotics, great improvements in medical care, improvements in communication, agriculture, hybridization, both in animal husbandry and in the growing of crops, and all kinds of things. And to attribute that to fossil fuels is quite simply fallacious. But the point of this broadcast is to point out that the whole peak oil advocacy, the concept of peak oil, as appealing as it is to many environmentalists, and I should say that I am two thumbs down on fossil fuels. They're bad news. If people were to take the whole peak oil thing to heart to a certain extent, it might lead to a very constructive environmental approach. Don't bet on it. I think it's just as likely to serve as a panic and as a sort of provocation to people's worst instincts. But the whole, what this essay does is to reveal in no uncertain terms the frankly overt Nazi character of the whole peak oil scam. This essay speaks for itself, and it is exactly what you would expect from Thyssen-Bornemisza. It is exactly what you would expect from the Bormann Group. It is exactly what you would expect from the Third Reich. In its overground and underground phases, it went overground to begin with, it went underground, and now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, it's coming back to hell up overground, and you'd better be careful. With that introduction, listen to a reading of an article that was published in July of 2005. It's article number 573 from issue number 55 of the Association for the Study of Peak Oil newsletter. And this received the endorsement of Colin Campbell, the main man, so to speak, of ASPO. The author of this is William Stanton. Reducing Population in Step with Oil Depletion. And this piece of Nazi filth reads as follows. Recent articles in the ASPO newsletter have agreed that the explosion of world population from about 0.6 billion in 1750 to 6.4 billion today was initiated and sustained by the shift from renewable energy to fossil fuel energy in the Industrial Revolution. There is agreement that the progressive exhaustion of fossil fuel reserves will reverse the process, though there is uncertainty as to what a sustainable global population would be. In this time of energy abundance and the complacency it engenders, the vast majority of the general public assumes that what the future holds is, quote, more of the same, unquote. They argue, if pushed, that the expertise inherited by post-fossil fuel scientists and engineers will allow a smooth transition into a new kind of energy-rich world in which renewable generators will produce as much energy as fossil fuels do now. Such a view is untenable because it ignores the fact that almost all materials essential to modern civilization will be orders of magnitude more costly and scarce when they have to be produced using renewable energy instead of fossil fuels. In 2150, for example, a wind turbine constructed of steel, concrete, and plastic may not be able to generate during its lifetime as much renewable energy as would have been used up in creating it. Imagine refining, mining, and smelting the metal ores, quarrying and transporting the rock, growing the biomass, fabricating the component parts, and erecting and maintaining the structure, using only the trickle of electricity produced by another similar turbine. Vast engineering projects such as constructing the first Airbus A30 airliner using only renewable energy from start to finish would be unthinkable, to say nothing of flying the plane without oil. Interrupting briefly again, even this portion of the analysis is so full of holes and, I suspect, willful omissions, including, for example, recycling of materials. But again, at some point a longer show will have to be devoted to this. But there are environmental critics that could do a better job of poking holes in this sticky piece of Nazi filth than I could do here. But I want to present this because lying beneath the seemingly humanistic and progressive surface of the oily peakers, as I call them, is just straight, unabashed, murderous Nazi propaganda, which is what you would expect from Thyssen-Bornemisza. Continuing. If in this article I discuss ways in which a global population reduction of some 6 billion people is likely to take place during the 21st century, precedent suggests that nearly everyone will ignore me. He must be mad, media reviewers concluded when they read my first probes into the subject 2 years ago and effectively blacklisted the book, Stanton 2003. After all, do the world's leading politicians and their scientific advisors, including highly paid demographers working for the United Nations and other international bodies, ever doubt that economic business as usual, unquote, will continue for the foreseeable future? But given that ASPO is successfully challenging conventional wisdom on oil depletion, there were 4 anxious letters on the subject of peak oil in my local weekly newspaper in May. What are the options? The first and most likely scenario is rejection. People in high places view an alleged need for population reduction with incredulity, scorn, and denial. In consequence, the price of fossil fuels, especially oil, goes on rising without causing serious alarm in the West, except perhaps in the business world. When, probably before 2010, the price is so high that construction of new airliners, airport terminals, Olympic villages, and traffic reduction schemes judders to a halt, uncontrollable inflation and recession will spread around the world. The oil price may stabilize for a while as manufacturing wilts along with demand for its products. Again, interjecting briefly, the notion that the price of oil is going to be so high by 2010 that simply industrial production will come to a halt. There are other factors, including America's debt situation that might cause huge problems, but it ain't going to be this. And again, this sticky morass of Nazi propaganda is full of so many holes. I haven't got time to poke the holes at this point. There are people who could do that better than I. It's to be hoped they will. What I'm doing here is pointing out that, again, the apples don't fall too far from the damn tree. And this particular Nazi apple has fallen very close indeed to the Thyssen-Bornemisza Reich tree on which it was grown. Continuing. In third world nations without oil that can neither buy food nor grow in an adequate quantity without mechanized agriculture, a Darwinian struggle for shrinking resources of all kinds will be in full swing. Tribe against tribe, religion against religion, family against family. The imperative to survive will be driving strong groups to take what they want from weak ones. The concept of human rights will be irrelevant. How can the weak have no rights to food when there is not enough even for the strong? It may well be that in the West, the same argument will affect the thinking of militarily powerful nations. Quote, if billions must die and we have the technology to ensure that they are others, not us, why should we hold back? Instantaneous nuclear elimination of population centers might even be considered merciful compared to starvation and massacres prolonged over decades. Eventually, probably before 2150, world population will have fallen to a level that renewable energy, mainly biomass, can sustain. It is likely to be similar to the population before the Industrial Revolution. That is the do-nothing, let-nature-take-its-course scenario involving more than a century of immeasurable human suffering. What alternatives are there? They have to be scenarios in which enlightened governments and their populations, with astonishing foresight and determination, take positive action to reverse population growth by new draconian laws. And now we get the real curveball from this particular Nazi relief pitcher. China has pioneered such an approach by its one-child-per-family policy. ASPO's oil depletion protocol, Campbell of 2004, is a scenario that aims to persuade national governments to cope with declining oil production equitably and peacefully on the world scale. An annual depletion rate, the percentage of remaining global oil reserves produced each year, currently about 2.5% per year, is calculated by experts, after which nations agree to reduce their consumption and/or production of oil year after year, strictly in accordance with the depletion rate. How population reduction will be achieved in step with growing oil shortage is not spelt out. Some will see the protocol as too idealistic for a Darwinian world because it expects every nation to cooperate regardless of whether they are resource-rich or poor, have a high or a low birth rate, or are responsibly or chaotically governed. Probably the greatest obstacle to the scenario with the best chance of success, in my opinion, is the Western world's unintelligent devotion to political correctness, human rights, and the sanctity of human life. Check this out again. I'm going to repeat this for purposes of emphasis. Probably the greatest obstacle to the scenario with the best chance of success, in my opinion, is the Western world's unintelligent devotion to political correctness, human rights, and the sanctity of human life. Okay? More from this Nazi tract. In the Darwinian world that preceded and will follow the fossil fuel era, these concepts were and will be meaningless. Survival in a Darwinian resource-poor world depends on the ruthless elimination of rivals, not the acquisition of moral kudos by cherishing them when they are weak. In fact, human civilization in the fossil fuel era has been totally anomalous. Fueled by the unthinking exploitation and exhaustion of all the world's resources, not just fossil fuels. Sir Fred Hoyle pointed out decades ago that Western civilization was a one-shot affair, unquote, for this reason. So the population reduction scenario with the best chance of success has to be Darwinian in all its aspects, with none of the sentimentality that shrouded the second half of the 20th century in a dense fog of political correctness. It is best examined at the nation-state scale. The United Kingdom will serve as the model. To those sentimentalists who cannot understand the need to reduce UK population from 60 million to about 2 million over 150 years, and who are outraged at the proposed replacement of human rights by cold logic, I would say, you have had your day in which your woolly thinking has messed up not just the Western world, but the whole planet, which could, if Homo sapiens had been truly intelligent, have supported a small population enjoying a wonderful quality of life almost forever. You have thrown away that opportunity, unquote. The Darwinian approach in this planned population reduction scenario is to maximize the well-being of the UK as a nation state. Individual citizens and aliens must expect to be seriously inconvenienced by the single-minded drive to reduce population ahead of resource shortage. The consolation is that the alternative, letting nature take its course, would be so much worse. The scenario is immigration is banned. Unauthorized arrivees are treated as criminals. Every woman is entitled to raise one healthy child. No religious or cultural exceptions can be made, but entitlements can be traded. Abortion or infanticide is compulsory if the fetus or baby proves to be handicapped. Darwinian selection weeds out the unfit. Parenthetically, no more Stephen Hawking's, huh? Continuing with this Nazi filth. When, through old age, accident, or disease, an individual becomes more of a burden than a benefit to society, his or her life is humanely ended. Voluntary euthanasia is legal and made easy. Imprisonment is rare, replaced by corporal punishment for lesser offenses and painless capital punishment for greater offenses. And again, by the way, what he's advocating was precisely relatively early Nazi Germany, and then, as we'll see, not so early Nazi Germany. A rough calculation suggests that by following these draconian but simple rules, UK population could be reduced by 5 to 10 million during the first 10 years without excessive pain compared to the alternatives. If this was thought too fast or too slow, there would be scope for modifying the child entitlements. The punishment regime would improve social cohesiveness by weeding out criminal elements. UK military forces should be maintained strong and alert, given that other nations working to different scenarios or to none at all would certainly attempt Darwinian piracy on UK trade routes or mount mass immigration invasions of UK coasts. Collaboration with other nations practicing the same population reduction scenario would be of great mutual advantage. Initially, the greatest threats to UK security would come from rogue nations unwilling to curb traditionally high birth rates, but lacking the means to feed the ever-growing numbers of new mouths. In the past, these were the poverty-stricken nations that repeatedly received humanitarian aid and famine relief, which did nothing to reduce the birth rate. In a Darwinian world, nature would take its course. In consequence, their populations would reduce particularly fast, and their threat would fade away. After 4 or 5 decades, the populations of the UK and other nations following the same scenario would probably be halved. In the rest of the world, where nature was doing the reduction in an ambience of massacres and destruction, the proportionate fall would be greater, and the pain would have been terrible. In the UK, in contrast, where orderly population shrinkage would have outpaced resource shrinkage, a relatively comfortable quality of life would have been enjoyed throughout the period. There would have been no loss of technological expertise, but it would no longer be employed in grandiose, energy-wasteful projects. Instead, there would be intensive research into cost-effective methods of renewable energy recovery. A particular problem could arise from the fact that the world's greatest oil reserves are controlled by the nations surrounding the Gulf. They have dizzyingly high birth rates, which for cultural reasons they might not want to lower. Their populations exploded following the discovery of oil, and if the explosion continues, even a very high oil price will not provide enough national income to prevent national poverty. Indeed, the demand for Gulf oil might occasionally fall if, for example, alternative sources were made available to nations practicing orderly population reduction, and there was minimal demand from the chaotic rest of the world. After a decade or two of unrestricted population growth, with limited income from oil and terrible shortages, especially of water, nature will begin to reverse population growth around the Gulf. Of course, in a Darwinian world, a militarily powerful nation might try to take oil by force anywhere on the planet. World War II provided recent examples, oil supply being critical to Germany and Japan. Another problem is likely to be the residual opposition to population reduction from sentimentalists and or religious extremists unable to understand that the days of plenty, when criminals and the weak could be cherished at public expense, are over. Acts of violent protest, such as are carried out today by animal rights activists and anti-abortionists, would, in the Darwinian world, attract capital punishment. Population reduction must be single-minded to succeed. One is tempted to snap to attention and give a stiff-armed salute and a hearty Sieg Heil to that. But again, that speaks for itself. The eugenics roots of Nazi genocide are something I've spoken about in many, many programs. A current book, The War Against the Weak by Edwin Black, is an excellent source on that. Go to For the Record 506, in particular the description for the Record 506. There's a much more detailed analysis, not only of peak oil, but of some of the cartel agreements between Standard Oil and the old IG Farben complex, and the whole issue of synthetic oil, the very interesting resuscitation of the Leuna facility in what had been East Germany by, surprise, surprise, the Thyssen Group and a major French oil company, that part of the CDU funding scandal. The Leuna facility was the largest synthetic oil facility for IG Farben and the Third Reich. It has been resuscitated by the Thyssen Group. I wonder why. Again, this is a subject, the many fallacious holes in this I will go into at some point in the future. There are people, scientists and environmentalists who could do a better job of this than I. We're now going to read an excerpt from an essay that I've included in a number of programs, including and especially For the Record of 506, the aforementioned 506. This is from The Coming Panic Over the End of Oil, Coming to a Ballot Box Near You. This was basically posted and apparently authored by Walter Shaysby, who became the first fatality from West Nile fever in Southern California shortly after publishing this essay. Interesting in and of itself. Of the Thyssen-Bornemisza epicenter for petro consultants. Again, no, peak oil, I should say. The epicenter of peak oil was Petroconsultants of Geneva. Quoting here, since the 1950s, they have been fed data on oil exploration and production by just about all the major oil companies, as well as by a network of about 2,000 oil industry consultants around the world. Parenthetically, what you're looking at here is a feedback loop, okay? That's where the data comes from. It comes from the people who stand the most to gain from permanent high oil prices, which we rationalized by peak oil. They use this data to produce reports on various matters pertinent to the oil industry, which they sell back to the industry. This much is known, Kenneth DeFays writes. The loudest warnings about the predicted peak of world oil production came from Petro Consultants. In a late 1998 merger, Petro Consultants became HIS Energy Group, a subsidiary of Information Handling Services Group, or HIS Group, a diversified conglomerate owned by Holland America Investment Corporation. HIS Group's immediate parent company for the Thyssen-Bornemisza Group, TBG, Incorporated. That's who owns this. In the 1920s, George Herbert Walker and his son-in-law, Prescott Bush, had helped the Thyssen dynasty finance its acquisitions through Union Banking Corporation and Holland America Trading Corporation. Until his death last year, Hans Heinrich Thyssen-Bornemisza, the nephew of the Nazi steel and coal magnate, was one of the world's richest men. Some of the old Hubertians would probably flinch at such an association. And as I pointed out, and I think this is my own writing here, it's essential to note that the raw data upon which HIS, formerly Petro Consultants, has drawn its peak oil conclusions is provided by the very oil industry interests that stand to profit from enormous price increases. This is tantamount to assigning the foxes to guard the henhouse and then giving credence to their claim that the world is facing a peak poultry crisis and resulting shortage of chickens. Indeed. Now, for more data, for more depth on this topic, again, for the record, 506, particularly the description for that, I would also refer listeners to For the Record 370, For the Record 273, For the Record Program 435, and other broadcasts, and particularly For the Record 305. Those deal not only with the Bush links to the Thyssen firm, but also with the Thyssen firm's paramount position in the post-war underground Reich and the Bormann flight capital program, where the Bushes were deeply involved with it. And, of course, the Bushes are ruling the roost today, and whether they are roosters or hens or, in fact, the foxes that anybody with half a brain knows they are, they shouldn't be ruling the roost or guarding the hen house under the circumstances. Note also, when examining For the Record 305 with a description for that, that through some of the cartel agreements between Standard Oil and IG Farben, the Hermann Schmitz Trust, one of the central elements of the Bormann Group, has as much stock in the Standard Oil companies as the Rockefellers themselves. And as I noted in For the Record 506, the Rockefellers, as of the early 70s, owned 38% of Thyssen. So if a lot of this seems arcane, weird, insane, it's actually in the context of globalization and the international cartel systems. But by God, if you pick up nothing from this broadcast, when you hear the gentle, unctuous, and seductive entreaties by the peak oil crowd, you just remember the brutal, murderous Nazi fist that lies under it. Because the apples don't fall too goddamn far from the tree. Now, again, I've broached some hopefully thought-provoking concepts. Please go to the Spitfire website and its many linked websites, from WFMU, the folks out in Michigan who put together the debate comic site with the declassified government documents, the great blog site, the profound descriptions that I put together every week of the For the Record shows, and the remarkable growing number of old anti-fascist books, more than 50 years old now, that we're putting up on the Spitfire website. Please take advantage of that information, not only to flesh out your understanding, but to equip yourselves for convincing others, because there is nothing more important. That concludes For the Record Program 534, Peak Oil, Fascism, and Genocide, being recorded on November 20th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.